some inclusion criteria for measures that we wanted in this book. And so we wanted to use measures that had instruments, you know, that had items, methods, et cetera, that were more widely used, that were distinct, published or manualized, fully documented, so people could access the articles, the information, reach the researchers. We have in the tables contact information for all the primary authors, et cetera, websites where applicable. We wanted you to be able to replicate them and understand them. We want people in the field and researchers to use them. Clearly, we wanted to have find the best measures, the most reliable, valid, some research behind them, and so we looked at that. And also in English, published in English. So a majority are, you know, were examined and tested in the U.S. We also have measures from other countries, if they are actually widely used, and they're also in English. So we did not include all the international measures that are being used in a lot of these fields that are in other languages, etc. So here are, so I also have as a handout, I gave you the list of measures and tables that are in the book, and so these coincide with those. So the community and neighborhood measures we include, there are two sets of measures that assess the capacity for community change and the ability of communities to engage in collective action and collaborative efforts. So there's chapter 4 talks about community readiness and capacity for change. So there's measures in there. There's 10 measures. There's readiness for change measures. There's capacity of community-based health and social initiatives. There's community organizational capacity measures and community ownership and preparedness measures. And then Chapter 5 is about strategic collective action in communities, and this is the collective, right, looking at collective efforts, the context affecting organizing, power and influence in CPBR, measures examining activities, functioning, and characteristics of coalitions and partnerships. And there's 11 measures in that chapter. All right, then we've got measures that assess the nature of social processes. We know how important social processes and engagement are, right? In communities, often understudied before, often very hard to measure before, but people have come a long way in this. So social connections, empowerment, efficacy. So chapter 6 is about social connections and the processes in communities, social processes, like the types of connections there among residents, the relationship between residents in their neighborhood or place, sense of community, social capital, social cohesion ties, collective advocacy. You know, when I did organizing, I always thought, I think we're doing this. It's called social capital now, I think. We're building strong relationships, we're building bonds. But I didn't know, have any idea how to measure it until I actually understood the research, right, later, right, when I went back to school. But making this available to people like who I was in the field could be really important to them and is very important to them now. So they can measure the effects of their work. We always said we would build, you know, communities' empowerment and engagement, right? So now we can measure that. Psychological empowerment among youth, adults, community empowerment, civic engagement, community participation, activism, leadership, and political efficacy, right? And engagement among both youth and adults. And that's in chapter 7. Then, all right, we got measures that, okay, measure characteristics, right? We all care about what the characteristics are in our community. And so we are looking at 4 different things. So in chapter 8, we have measures of community resources and resident satisfaction with those, right? So a lot of these are observation-based measures, but some are survey-based. So this is using both objective and subjective measures of community resources, amenities, environmental indicators, you know, awareness of public services, but also satisfaction, perceptions of the quality of the neighborhood, etc. Again, back to that built environment, the neighborhood food environment, related to nutrition, food access, cost and quality, walkability, you know, pedestrian cycling assessments to, you know, to see if people, and then walkability of a neighborhood, you know, all these things that have to do with encouraging people to be healthy, right? So we need to know if the environment supports that. So these measures actually look at that, green space, recreation, all of that. And these are often things that are missing, right, in some, in communities, in vulnerable communities. Housing and neighborhood change. So our project with CNCS is focused on neighborhood change and equitable development. And so some of, we're going to have there's a measure in this chapter using Google Street View to look at, you know, neighborhood change. So we're going to train our CAB and our community participants, our youth and adult participants, in how to do that, how to use that Google Street View measure to look at neighborhood change. So housing quality, affordability, vacancy, light, mobility, right, we know affects neighborhoods, people coming in and out of neighborhoods. That's all Claudia Colton. She did a great job with that. She's been doing that for years. And Dorothy Freeman did a lot with the built environment because she's a health policy person. So community disorder, crime and violence, this is looking at the both observational, right, and survey measures of physical and social disorder. Looking at systematic social observation, right, that is a process of how you collect the data that was developed by a sociologist. So measures of fear of crime and exposure to violence, and then methods and data for how you gather indicators of crime and violence in communities. And that is really important. And then we also have measures that examine the overall quality and characteristics of place-based communities. So these are measures of place-based exclusion and unequal access to resources, racial and economic segregation, looking at negative environmental exposures, and access to transportation, jobs, and services. And then our meta concept, global concept of community well-being and quality of life, there are some composite indicators, both domestic and international, looking at residents' perceptions of individual community well-being, and then some that use, again, administrative data, such as human development indicators, quality of life, and livability. All right. So I want you guys to think about this. So this is one scenario, and you have, there's a handout with three other ones. So if we're, our goal, so we're working in a collaborative team, right? And our goal is to prevent community and youth violence. There's a lot of research that shows that social connections and cohesion, in other words, known as collective efficacy, shared norms and values, and resident engagement, right, in addressing neighborhood problems actually leads to lower levels of community and youth violence. So this is collective efficacy, neighborhood collective efficacy. You're part of a team of social work and other researchers, neighborhood and youth-serving agencies, local police department, who are working together to reduce community and youth violence using innovative approaches. So the team's interested in assessing neighborhood levels of collective efficacy and their impact on indicators of community and youth violence and developing strategies to increase collective efficacy in targeted neighborhoods. So, what's the geographical unit of analysis? What's your ecological setting? What do you think? Is it individual, collective, community, societal? Is it a combination of both? It depends on your research question. So I would actually look at individual and community level indicators in this. You know, look at the individual's perception, how safe they feel, their perception of crime and disorder, the community levels of collective efficacy, in the community levels of crime and violence. So reviewing the measures we discussed earlier, what would you do? So what measures would you use? Why would you use those? How would you go about sampling people to be in your study, or how would you collect that data? Would you try to do bespoke neighborhoods? Would you try to do buffers if you're going to do compared design? You know, one of the strategies could be recruiting participants to be engaged that are that represent different sections of a neighborhood. So you actually really have a representative sample to understand crime and violence across the neighborhood. So what are the strengths and limitations of the measures? And what's the extent of community participation and engagement in your research study? And how would you facilitate this engagement? Those are all really important things to think about, right? And to answer as you begin to design your study and then also select your measures. So now, what would you need to consider when selecting your measures? What levels of measurement? What ecological settings? What domains? What methodological issues or considerations, right? What else might you consider? So, you know, there are other resources for community and neighborhood measurement that are out there that are helpful. The National Neighborhood Indicators Project is one. NeighborWorks America, they do community development. They have success measures. And the CDC and other kinds of health institutes also have compendiums of measures. I'm sure there's more than this. But these are just a few examples. So again, the purpose of our book was to really promote the use of reliable and valid measures for community and neighborhood research, you know, including people who are doing program evaluation, community-based participatory research, community-level intervention research, people just looking at neighborhood effects. It runs the gamut, and we believe it can be used by multiple disciplines, right? People across social work, sociology, urban community development, public health, community psychology, sociology, practitioners in the field, health practitioners in the field, nonprofits, community grassroots organizations, community neighborhood organizations. So we think it also can be used to train students as well as staff from community agencies, to promote services, programs, and interventions that benefit community residents, institutions, you know, from neighborhood organizations, CDCs, foundations, city planning, health departments, etc. So I just want to end with thinking about what was the most important thing you learned today, right? And how will you use this information? How do you apply this information? What is important to you in your research? And was this helpful, hopefully? So I just want to again thank you guys. Wow, all 153 of you. It's a little crazy, but thank you so much. And I'm just really looking forward to looking at all the chat. And Melissa is going to actually lead us in some Q&A for the rest of the time.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Mary Omer. We've got some very active discussion going on in the chat box already, so I think our Q&A session is going to be great. But before we open the line for questions and answers, Gina Cross, the acting director of our NCCC program, will give us a few brief closing remarks.
Great. Thank you so much. And thank you, Dr. Omer, for the presentation. But more importantly, thank you for being a part of the technical panel for the work that we're doing that's going to move us to the next level. So AmeriCorps NCCC is a national service program for 18 to 24-year-olds. It's residential and team-based. We have about 26 years worth of data because we've counted every tree we've planted, we've counted every sandbag we've laid down, and many, many, many other things we've been counting. Pounds of debris removed, all kinds of things. And the impact of the program, anecdotally, we feel we have a lot of success and the ability to describe that success, but the mission of NCCC is challenging because we don't know the value of the weight between it. So we have two competing priorities. One is to develop our members who serve with us for 10 months into future leaders. And the competing part of it is the impact to the community and what we're actually doing and how well we're doing it. So discussions like this, grant activity like this that is furthering the ability to, one, give us more information, to look at ourselves differently and ask ourselves the right kinds of questions with the right kind of framework that actually will help us, one, define better what our community impact is and help us solve some problems with a mission that's pretty complicated like ours with competing priorities of where do we invest more, how do we make changes, what do we do to move our program impact to the next level so that we are demonstrating through important pieces of evidence and not just very basic counts that validate, where we're investing our time, energy, and effort, because I've challenged folks who work with me to make sure that we're doing a few very simple things, that we're recruiting the right kinds of people and helping to retain them, that we have the most relevant project base across the country to meet our nation's most critical needs, so that we can build champions in and around the work we do. And those three things hopefully lead us to having the best business case for running a residential program like NCCC. So having this information and framework and all of the work that guides us that we've heard today, using these kinds of opportunities to help move our work forward has been extraordinarily valuable. And we're into it a year and a half, maybe I'm stretching the timeline a little bit. But we have a very long way to go, and this important work that you do, Dr. Omer, and that our colleagues can use to help us move the ball forward, not just in how, me as the national director can use important data and information and evidence to inform my decisions, but how do we then represent our work and the impact of our service opportunities and experience to the country writ large, to the taxpayers who are interested in the return on investment of what we're investing in programs like the one I oversee. So it's with great appreciation that we have really great minds that help us put these things together and move us forward. So thank you so much for being a part of this process. And I'm looking forward to all that is unlocked with this, with the keys that will help move us forward in this direction. So thanks to Mary and all of your team here at CNCS, but more importantly, for finding the right kinds of resources that help build us the infrastructure to move forward so that we're demonstrating the best we can on behalf of, one, being good stewards of the taxpayers' dollars, but also doing the right thing through our national service opportunities. So, thanks. This is exciting.
That was just a huge motivator for me for why I wanted to do this, is to show impact so that additional resources and supports go into the communities that are going to get them, to build those strong communities, to show the return. Hey, there is an impact. How to measure that, how to demonstrate that, and how to show how valuable it is, the work that you guys do and the work that people, I'm sure all of you guys listening today do, and to get additional resources into these communities and to change it, to build stronger and healthy and sustainable communities.
All right, thank you. Thank you to Dr. Mary Omer, Dr. Mary Hyde, and Gina Cross for such a wonderful dynamic presentation. And we have a few minutes left to answer some questions. So for our in-person audience, if you don't mind, state your name before asking a question. For our online audience, you can ask a question by typing it in the Q&A box. We have a couple of questions that have already come in. And for example, how about, we've got a question from Christina Kobe. Does it happen often that both objective and subjective measures are used in these sort of data collection enterprises?
doesn't happen very often. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it, I mean, I think we're getting better at that. I know when I started doing some of this research, it wasn't the case. But I think we need to move in that direction. Because even that just case scenario I told you about with community violence, and I've done some work. I had a little pilot study that gathered survey data from the participants that we trained in collective efficacy. But I want to take it to the next stage of, okay, now we actually need to look at the data, right? We need to get administrative data. We need objective data. We need to combine that with survey data. And we need, that tells a better story. That tells us, gives us more information to understand if we're having an impact.
Okay, thank you. We also have a question from Keisha Moore. Mary, can you review sliding scale comparative analysis of neighborhoods? And would it compose neighborhood boundaries of individual use patterns and compare to demographically matched individuals in another neighborhood?
Yeah, I think you definitely need to be able to do that. So you could, there's different, I mean, Claudia is the expert in this, but there are definitely ways to be able to do comparative analysis and have, create those buffers or boundaries or bespoke neighborhoods that actually you could replicate in a neighborhood you weren't doing an intervention in, and at least get administrative data, right, from that, or even do a survey, right, do a stratified sample, right, based on those, that stratification, using those buffers.
Okay. We'll take one more question from the chat box and then one from the room here. Faced with limited resources, which would be your top measures to deploy in a community study? This comes from John Mollenkopf.
Okay. Yeah. So, okay, I'm going to go back to the administrative data, right? Because that's not very expensive to access and to use. To start there, to maybe create a baseline to make an argument for further resources to do more on the ground data collection with people in a community, right? So I would say, again, that's where to make a case to get additional resources additional more in-depth measurement. That might be a good place to start. And there's so many different tools you can use to do that, not just, census data. And in the book, we have a lot of different ways to gather data that's objective to make a case for whatever you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea, that the limited resources consideration, you might begin to do some research using those methods that might allow you to build and to use other methods. Thank you. So do you have any specific examples of valid measures for neighborhood characteristics that you've seen, and perhaps any data that's been collected in an accessible way for multiple audiences?
So some of the measures in our book, if you look at the chapter on the community resources, right? So community resources and resident satisfaction, and also the built environment influencing healthy living. There are some reliable and validated measures in there of different neighborhood indicators and characteristics, right? Depending on what the goal of your study is. Also in, if you look at the neighborhood change, housing and neighborhood change, there are some validated measures using data, administrative data in there, as well as there's some survey measures in those chapters also. I would say those are pretty helpful. And you can assess, you can look at them and look at, assess whether they fit your research question clearly, but try to include things that had some research behind them, right, or some validity and reliability.
Right. Thank you. Thanks for directing us to exactly where we could find that answer in your book. So we didn't have a lot of time for Q&As, but we are getting close to 3 o'clock, and we'd like to be respectful of everyone's time. So Mary or Dina, do you have anything you'd like to add before we close?
Just appreciate everyone's time today.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, everyone. And please, as I'm going to go through your chat, but feel free to contact me or any of my co-authors. They all know about this today. If you have questions, I see somebody put Claudia's website up there. So please, I'd be happy to answer any questions you have or think, you know, and follow up to this webinar.
Wonderful, Mary. Thank you for offering your contact information. So thank you again so much to all of our speakers and our audience today. This has been a wonderful discussion. We'd like to thank Emily Reines and Connor Bergner from ICF International and their colleagues for all of their technical support that helps make this magic happen. We'll and be sending all of the folks who attended a post-webinar survey. So please let us know your thoughts on the webinar and ideas for future webinars. We would love to hear what you have to say. And we will be posting this recording within about a month on our website. If you'd like any more information, you can find us there. Thank you so much for attending today.